Whoa, you went no contact with your family? Like, you don't talk to them at all? Nope, because they're toxic as fuck. Are you also the villain for walking away from your toxic family in order to preserve your peace? Welcome to the Character Outs podcast, where I am on a mission to normalize going no contact with toxic family. Welcome, all you terrible people. Let's talk about it. Welcome back to the Character Outs podcast. I'm so happy you're here, and I'm so happy to have this beautiful guest with me today. Mei-Ling Choi is an intuitive medium that grew up as the odd one out, a bridge between East and West with one foot on the earth and the other in the spirit realm. Her goal is to help other women who identify as the black sheep of their families move from feeling inadequate to becoming powerful cycle breakers. I love that, and I cannot wait for you to hear from her. Welcome. How are you?
Hi, Terry. Thank you so much for having me on. I really wish that your podcast existed when I was a teen and in my 20s. It would have been so helpful.
I wish my podcast existed too. I know, to think we went through it just grappling for answers, right? Mm-hmm. And validation.
Yes. And feeling really alone most of the time.
Yeah. Yes. And like a terrible person.
Yes.
Go down the list. Yeah. Right. So I love that you say from black sheep to powerful cycle breaker. Mm-hmm. So tell me the time or what led up to your realization that, oh, wait a second, I think I might be the black sheep of this family.
So I have my story is a little bit interesting that I actually, before I became the black sheep, I actually started out as kind of the golden child. So I grew up a single mom family, but at the time, and it could have been, you know, I didn't quite have the awareness when I was younger. So, you know, at the time, to me, it felt like I had a very idyllic childhood with my mom and my grandparents. So her parents, you know, I would stay there every weekend and was loved and doted on. And then everything changed when my parents divorced. And then my father had custody of me, and I ended up moving from Belgium to Hong Kong. To be with him and my stepmom and two half-sisters who I didn't know existed until we were literally on her doorstep. So everything came crashing down at that time. I was 8 years old. And it was very clear after the first 3 months that my stepmom really didn't want to have me there. If she had a choice, she didn't want me to be there. I became the inconvenient add-on. And basically for the next 10 years, she really let me know how much she did not want me to be there. And, you know, with my half-sisters, she would create friction, I feel, purposely, and conflict, you know, between, you know, them three against me, also everybody against each other. And from that moment on, everything just turned upside down, you know, from being loved and cherished all of a sudden to being the scapegoat, the receptacle for everybody's anger. Jeez. And resentment. And just, yeah, it was like my therapist said, it became a Cinderella story, but the not so good part. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry that you endured that. I hope you know that you deserved so much better. I think you do.
Thank you. Yes, now I know.
Yeah. What, how did that feel? Because I often wonder if, I know that there were times that I was the golden child when I was falling in line with my narcissistic mother, but how interesting. Yeah. What a traumatic, overwhelming, life-changing, if really discard to be the golden child and then the black sheep. How did you work your way through that?
It was very hard. It really felt like the floor had just bottomed out. It almost felt like there was, you know, the change was overnight. Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult because then, you know, I'm going from one reality to another reality.
Yeah.
I had never known, you know, this type of bullying, especially by people inside the family. And it just, you know, at the time, I feel I couldn't cope with it. You know how they say when you're younger with the trauma, everything kind of goes into a freeze response. Mm-hmm. It's almost just to cope with it, you have to freeze so that you can adapt. But it was at that moment when I was 8, I started having sleep problems. Mm-hmm. I couldn't sleep at night. You know, tried music, tried everything. And I think, you know, of course, this, it was caused by, you know, this traumatic thing. And at night, my mind would be racing and I just couldn't rest. I felt my whole body was just charged with adrenaline all the time. Wow. And of course, I started asking myself, what have I done?
Yeah.
You know, to warrant this kind of treatment.
Did you ever bring it up to your dad and be like,
mm-hmm. I did in the beginning, and then I just stopped, because when I brought it up, he was basically, his response was, stop making trouble. You know, you should be grateful. You're not your stepmom's child, but she's taking you in. Like, I'm some stray dog. I'm not a stray dog, you know.
You're not a stray dog.
But the way he said it, and, you know, he would get angry about it because it was, you know, inconvenient if I was rocking the boat.
Right.
And so slowly, slowly, I just learned that I should stay quiet.
How did you navigate those days?
Oh, it was very hard. I think I, to deal with it for, you know, survival, I very much started people pleasing. Mm. And, you know, they say the fawn response, that's something, you know, a new word out there, but very much.
Right?
Yeah. Just to try to, you know, appease my stepmom. Don't let her get mad at me. You know, be the good girl. Don't be an inconvenience. And, you know, for myself, reading, I've always loved to read, but reading really became like a refuge, and drawing. Reading especially, just to escape the reality that I was in. Yeah.
That's so interesting. Do you feel like you were creating a new persona that could deal with your reality? Or do you feel like you were still grappling with any emotions of abandonment, or wondering if you had done anything wrong, or wondering what was going on?
I think I did both of those at the same time. I had to quickly create a new persona that wasn't annoying to my stepmom. So before all of this, you know, I was very an outspoken little girl. You know, my mom's nickname for me was the boss, because I would say whatever was on my mind. You know, I was well-liked at school, almost, you could say, like, you know, popular kid, and everything changed. So after that, everything changed, because just by being myself, you know, being assertive, confident, it would just grate on my stepmom. She just, everything about my natural self annoyed her. And I quickly learned to shapeshift, you know, press that part down, and then be more compliant, more, you know, very much have those, the good girl demure kind of traits, because that's what she could accept. If I was like that, then I would annoy her a little less. Yeah.
Wow. So when did it finally, so you were so tiny. When did it finally come to a head? And how did you leave? What happened?
So I think it was senior year, and I just decided I have to get out of this house. I really felt like I couldn't deal with it anymore. It felt like a very life and death situation in my mind. And things clicked into place. It really felt like the universe airlifted me out of there. So I had already graduated, and some things fell through, you know, with school, and I was accepted to a school in the UK. It very much feels like my stepmom sabotaged that, where she said, no, we're not paying the, you know, tuition and everything. And I feel like she didn't want me to go there. But by chance, my dad said, hey, I have to go to a business trip. to China. Do you want to join me? And which was, you know, he would ask me once in a while, but something in me said, yes, go. It sounds like a very boring thing, but go. And then on that trip, then we met someone whose kids were going to this university, and they were accepting people from Hong Kong at the time. Was, you know, Hong Kong was becoming a part of China again. And they were really welcoming, you know, people from Hong Kong where I grew up. And then everything just fell into place. I got accepted there. And I finally left my stepmom's house. And I remember so clearly the first morning waking up, you know, not outside of this household. I remember. And the first thing I thought was, I'm free. I'm finally free.
Do you ever feel like you woke up a changed woman, like, or do you feel like you were back to your feisty self, or did your feisty self slowly emerge again? Or,
so that's,
I mean, you were free, but you still were so, I imagine, damaged and broken.
It's a really good question, because in my mind, I had always thought, you know, once I leave, I'm going to wake up and I'll be my own self.
Yeah.
And, people don't tell you that, like, you're free in a certain way, but I feel growing up in a family, you know, with narcissists, it changes you forever.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I feel that old feisty self hasn't, in the form that she was, hasn't ever come back. In the first year or two, I was grappling with a lot of things, and I would, you know, would wonder, you know, I'm not in her household anymore, but why do I still feel so bad about myself?
Mm.
You know, why do I still feel so unworthy in a lot of ways? And then it wasn't until slowly over the years, I think, kind of had to shed those things as a skin where the real me was beneath, that the, you know, the authentic me started to emerge. But it took a long time. Yeah.
That's a beautiful way to say it too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And I think you're right, you know, narcissism and narcissistic abuse changes us.
Mm-hmm.
But what a beautiful thing that you are now embodying both the strength from your younger self and your healing, and the way that you're just presenting this healing to the world and your new self, because that's not easy to do.
Thank you. And yeah, it's not. And I don't think I can ever honestly say that I'm grateful for, you know, what my stepmom did to me. I cannot honestly say that I was thankful for the verbal and emotional abuse. However, I'm thankful for, how to say this, the gifts that emerged. I became very resilient. And I would say, you know, a lot of the women that I work with too, and maybe you can confirm this as well, I think as a result of having to step on eggshells all the time and reading my stepmom's mood, because, you know, I could just tell by when she woke up in the morning, you know, one glance over that, I'm like, okay, I can tell what kind of day it's going to be like. All that stuff felt like a burden before, but, you know, I think it helped me to become the professional intuitive that I am now, because, again, like I said, a lot of the women that I work with, they're naturally intuitive, very empathic, because we had that sensitivity growing up. We had to have our feelers out, you know.
So true. So that's fascinating what you do. Tell me about how you recognized this about yourself, this intuitive side to yourself, the intuitive medium, if you can explain exactly what you do. And also how you discovered that about yourself.
So I do believe that I was born with the ability. It does run on my father's side of the family through the women. So my grandmother and my aunt. Yeah. But I think probably when I was 3 or 4, I would start to get very intense dreams. And before, when I was lying in bed, especially quiet moments when I was by myself, I would hear people talking to me.
Really?
But people that weren't there, I would see things. And, you know, when I was younger, I just thought that's how everybody operated until I started talking to my classmates, and I realized that I was seeing things that they couldn't see. And it was very frightening. When I was younger, you don't know what's going on. And then, you know, when I would talk to my mom, because she didn't have the ability, and it's normal that she would be this way, but she would say, it's not real. Don't worry. Don't be afraid. But in my mind, it was very real.
Yeah. And then, it was.
Yeah. And then I think in my teens, you know, I'd heard about these scary incidents that happened. You know, I heard, you know, people had to call, you know, an exorcist and all these kind of things. And it just really scared me. And I decided to shut that part down. Yeah. Especially when you have, you know, teen hormones already up and down. The last thing I need is, yeah, you know, seeing things that aren't there. And so I shut it down for a very long time.
Wow.
And it wasn't until I was 27, I kind of had a dark night of the soul. And I realized, okay, you know, maybe instead of fighting this, I should just embrace it.
Wow.
And then I started reading lots of books about psychic development.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is the dark night of the soul actually a term that happens, or is that just something that you refer to that particular night where you realized, okay, I can't bridle this anymore?
It's both. So yeah. It's a term, you're basically having this crisis, like a spiritual crisis. I was feeling very depressed at that point, and when everything just hits rock bottom and you kind of have to make a choice where, you know, if you just let it go, you're basically just letting yourself deteriorate. Mm-hmm. And it's not self-harm, but you know, you're not taking care of yourself, you're basically just letting yourself deteriorate. Or you choose life, where you proactively say, okay, I have all these fears, I have all these things, but I'm willing to face them and, you know, to overcome them and, you know, breaking the cycle. And luckily at that point, I had told myself, okay, I'm going to choose life. And since I was younger, I always felt very much a closeness to Kuan Yin, so the goddess of mercy. So because my father is Chinese and she's, I would say, like a mother figure.
Oh.
And I'd always felt a strong connection to her. Always felt, if, you know, that even if I couldn't trust the adults around me, I felt a closeness to her and I felt she was looking after me. So during that dark night of the soul, I said, okay, Kuan Yin, I realized that I have turned my back on you. It wasn't you who turned your back on me. Just show me what to do. Tell me what I need to do, because I feel really at rock bottom now. And it was funny because, you know, I was expecting some kind of big mystical answer, but the answer was, go to the gym.
Maybe you didn't understand. What?
But later I realized why. You know, I hadn't been taking care of my body. At that time I was drinking a lot. And then when I went to the gym, then I discovered yoga, and then I discovered meditation, and slowly, slowly, step by step, then I was guided to all these things. Yeah.
I love that. Don't you love how every step just leads us to our journey and where we're supposed to be? I love that.
Yes.
Wow. So when did you realize, because you said you work with a lot of women who are empaths, and do those women come from toxic childhoods, narcissistic abuse? Yeah.
Yes.
And you find that they have that same intuitive, because I have it too.
Yeah.
So just, I, how did you realize the tie, or how can you make sense of the connection for us who've been through what we've been through, and to have that, we have that intuitive side other than just modifying our life? And because I feel like it's deeper than that.
Yeah, I feel it's definitely deeper than that. So when I first started out doing professional intuitive work, my specialty was more around soul purpose. And I still do that now. But then I got curious about the people that I was helping, and I noticed this common thread, and I said, this is so interesting. Everybody has a really similar background as me. They're all scapegoats, or, you know, the black sheep. And I'm like, I want to see what this connection is about. And, you know, I realized many of the women that were coming to me, and they were already very intuitive, and they were doing a lot of things that were already in alignment with their soul purpose, you know, whether they knew or not, you know, and a lot of them were following their hearts.
Yeah.
And, And I was like, what? I wonder why this is. And then, you know, I started piecing things together. And we had that piece about, you know, walking on eggshells and everything mm-hmm. and feeling out the energy. But also, I feel that, you know, as the black sheep or the scapegoat, you don't really have a role model to turn to. Mm-hmm. You know, our parents are often the example of what not to do. Mm-hmm. And then, so that leaves you very much needing to guide yourself.
Yeah.
And then the guiding yourself, I think a lot of it comes and you start to listen more and more to your heart and your intuition. That's where you start to look for guidance. Yeah. And I think a lot of us are just born different. You know, the way mm-hmm. that we think, our values, they're all different from our family members. Mm-hmm. And so I feel, you know, a lot of the women that I work with, they are following a different beat. Yeah. They listen to their hearts because the people around you can't be trusted. So,
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I feel like for me, my mother really messed that up because she mm-hmm. actually would, I believe she had some psychic abilities and deeply intuitive, which was almost frightening because she was able to read me and hurt me and control me at my core, which now looking back was really frightening. But she would always say, oh, trust your gut, trust your heart, trust your gut. But when my gut was different from her plan for me, it mm-hmm. was, oh no, you're stupid. And so then it got me questioning myself. So do you have women who come to you that are like, are in that confusion of,
yes,
I know I trust myself, but I've been told not to trust myself. What is your advice to them?
Yes, all the time. So the advice is to slowly learn how to differentiate so your intuitive voice from the inner critic. Because mm-hmm. I do believe that the inner critic is it's a blend of all the, you know, authoritative voices, you know, our parents, teacher, and everything. Yeah. And it takes some practice, and that's why meditation is a great tool, because you must sit and listen to the internal voices. And but a way to tell the difference is the inner critic is harsh, and most of the time it's very yappy. Very much just, you know, nonstop chatter. It contradicts itself. But the main thing is it's very critical and it's mean. And the intuitive voice, while it can be firm and it's very honest, but it's compassionate. It will never put you down.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's not yappy. It's very calm. You know how we always say the still voice, small voice within.
Right.
It's calm and it's quiet and it's grounded. And then once you start to be able to tell the difference, then your intuition grows stronger and stronger. The more you listen to it, it grows stronger and stronger. And then the inner critic becomes more quiet. Yeah.
Wow. That's so amazing and also encouraging that we don't have to stay in the place of doubting ourselves and we don't have to listen to that inner critic.
Exactly.
You know, forever.
Exactly. Yeah, our intuition is very powerful. Yeah.
Wow, that's fascinating. And I love how you mentioned in your bio that you flip the narrative and you say you were never meant to meet your family's standards mm-hmm. as the cycle breaker.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Tell me about to expound upon that. How you even got to that place of power and that mindset.
So this was, you know, after I finally left the household and then I kind of had to discover a new me, you know, who am I when I'm not living with these people? You know, who am I if, you know, I'm not what they're saying all the time? Because, and this is where the intuitive voice comes in too, because my stepmom would always tell me, you are stupid. You have no street smarts. I don't know how you're going to survive. You know, you have your head in a book all the time. You know, you're useless, blah, 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 all these kind of terrible things. And you know, for if you hear this on a daily basis, you start to internalize it. You start to believe this garbage. But this is where your intuition comes in to rescue you, because there's always a part of you inside, no matter how quiet, it's like, no. That's not true. We know this is, that's not who we are.
You know? That makes me cry.
So your intuition's always guiding you and helping you. But when I left them, my intuition grew stronger, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know? And then I started journaling and thinking about this kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I was often called the troublemaker, you know, just for being me, just because I would, you know, question some truths. And the thing is, we get in trouble for breaking the family's rules, but in a toxic family, the rules are toxic. So it's
good thing. I love that you said it just for what it is. Like, that's so basic, but so, so true.
Yeah. Well, they mess with your head. They make you feel, you know, like, you know, the rules are gold, cannot touch them and everything. But when I thought about this, when I was talking to another friend also who was also a black child, I'm like, wait a minute, but our family is toxic, so the rules are toxic. So isn't it a good thing we can't live up to their standard?
Yeah.
Because my stepmom, she would, you know, since I was a teen, she would basically, you know, she could phrase it or word it in whatever way she wanted, but she was basically telling me and her daughters, be a gold digger when you grow up. You know, when you're looking to be in a relationship, that's the first thing you should find out, you know, how much does he make? How much can you get?
Jeez.
And if I were to follow, you know, live up to the family standards, then I would be a wonderful gold digger.
Right, right.
Yeah. But everything when I was young, I'm like, everything felt wrong about that to me.
Yeah.
So that's why, because, you know, the black sheep is born, I almost believe, if we see the family line as a living being, I think the family line, when it starts to get sick because, you know, certain toxic patterns are repeated, I think it births a black sheep. Like there's a little mutation, and I say this in the most loving way, that there's a few people, I feel, every generation or so that are born that think completely different for the health of the family line. They're born different because just by being themselves, they are going to make different choices. They are going to do something different from the pattern, something different from the traditions that are no longer healthy. And so you're born to not live up to those standards.
Yeah, I love that so much. I know that's making me cry. It resonates with me so much. I love that. And so that's such a powerful place to be. And I, again, you flipped the narrative again, you know, like, no, this is, you were here for a purpose. And how do you get past, I've been thinking a lot about, talking a lot about just fear of, okay, well, I have this purpose, but like, how do I execute it? It's scary, and it's family. Like, what do you do with that?
It is very scary. And like I said, you know, most of the people that I work with, they are so much more aligned already with their soul path than they think. You will, because we're born being drawn to certain passions and hobbies.
Yes.
Yes. And often your family will ridicule you about it too. You know, like said, what's wrong with wanting to read? She's like, you're a bookworm. Always, you're like, your nose in books. You don't know anything about the real world. Blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, complaining about me drawing or doing all these things. But actually, for me, you know, being drawn to books, being drawn to drawing, when I think about it now, as an intuitive, you know, I need to look into my mind's eye all the time. I use mostly clairvoyance clairaudience too, listening. But having drawn so much, you know, visualizing things on the outside really trained my inner eye.
Wow.
And when I do readings, then it's like a little video appears in my inner eye to show me, you know, what's going on with the other person. And books also train your empathy, because you read stories about, you know, other people's experience. And so with a lot of my clients, a lot of their gifts were already being developed. The universe was already training them. Yeah. And I feel many black sheep and scapegoats, they become advocates for other people. The gold is where the wound lies, and that is especially true for us. Yeah.
I remember hearing that as I was setting out on this mission. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something like, your passion lies where you were broken or wounded the most, or something like that.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I need to tap into that.
Yeah. So I'm wondering and curious, maybe for you, it was something around your voice or, you know, having to censor yourself or not being able to speak freely. And, you know, maybe that I feel the universe could have guided you to.
Yeah.
So now having a platform and sharing your truth and inviting others to share theirs too.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
It's amazing. May I ask you,
yeah,
what was the relationship like with you and your dad with this oppressive, manipulative stepmother who clearly displayed such abhorrence for you?
Yeah.
Did she get in the middle of your relationship with your dad? Did she damage it at all?
Yes. Yes, all the time. It was difficult because he actually wasn't around a lot.
Okay.
So he wasn't there to witness most of it.
Oh.
And it became very much, you know, my word against hers.
Okay.
And because I was a child, I was not believed.
Oh.
Yeah. Or just seen as, you know, someone making trouble, you know, not being grateful for having someone come in and accept me and, you know, raise me, even though I wasn't her daughter.
Again.
Yeah. And she would try to, you know, create a wedge between us. Mm. But I think the thing that I couldn't stand the most was she always wanted more money from him. And in her mind, she knew that I was close to him. And she would always tell me, call him and ask him, you know, where's the money for this month? And I really, really hated doing it. It felt so gross and it wasn't my place. And then my dad, who was, you know, very stressed with his work and everything, you know, I'd much rather call as a daughter to ask how he was doing. But she would literally be standing behind me in the room and would wait until I asked that question. And yeah, it caused friction between me and him. And, you know, he started seeing me as a troublemaker, rocking the boat, if I tried to, you know, talk about what was happening at home. I remember, I think I was maybe 9 years old or something, because I was so afraid to approach him that I wrote notes on a piece of paper. And I told him, you know, I'm having some trouble with my half-sister. She's bullying me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my stepmom isn't doing anything about her. So at this point, I was already censoring myself. So I took the little paper and I gave it to him. I'm like, please, please, please keep it secret. You know, help me, but don't let her know. But I think he showed her, because then the week later, she comes to me with all the paper. She's like, did you write this? What are you trying to do? You know, why are you trying to make your sister look like she's the villain? You know, what kind of terrible person are you? You're so selfish. And then, you know, went on, and it really, yeah, it really caused problems. And I started to become more and more afraid, or, you know, around talking to my dad, where before I felt like I had more open communication. There was punishment for it. Yeah.
So another way you had to pivot and modify.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy that you told that story about calling for money, because my mom would make me call my dad.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah. Which also, I remember feeling so yucky about it and thinking, I never talked to my dad. And now I'm, like you said, I would rather call to say, hey, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And now I'm calling and being like, you know, where's the money? Like the fact that the adult in our life put us in that situation was so.
Such an awful, awful.
Icky.
Yeah.
And then honestly,
mm-hmm.
like our dads should have been like, I'm not having this conversation with you. You're a child.
Totally.
Put your mother on the phone. Put your stepmother on the phone right now.
Totally. That's what I thought too.
Yeah.
That's what I thought too. I'm like, you should be here advocating for me that you should tell, you know, tell her this is not my place then. Yeah.
Right. Cause you surely couldn't have.
Yeah.
Wow. So what is your relationship like with them today?
So with my dad, I really don't speak to him much. Mm-hmm. It's minimal contact, but my stepmom, when I turned 29, when I got married, I just decided to cut her out completely. It was finally time. It was the best decision that I made. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Good for you. Proud of you. Mm-hmm. How did your dad receive that?
It was very touchy. And so I have to give a little bit of background. So, you know, all through my teens, my stepmom, you know, narcissists, they want to make everything about them. She had been looking forward to the day when I had my wedding, because to her, it was like, this is going to be my party. You know, I've raised you for 10 years. So, you know, I deserve this. When we have your wedding, then I get to be the main character. She, for years already in her mind, had been like, I'm going to invite, you know, this person, blah, 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 everything. And, you know, my dad and her had their relationship problems too. I think as I got older, my dad started taking me a little bit more seriously about this kind of stuff. And, you know, I'd spoken to him. I'm like, I'm thinking of not inviting her because this is my big day and everything. And he tried to talk me out of it. No, 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 that's going to look bad. You know, we can't do this. Like, she raised you, she should be there. So far, so far. And I had to push against a lot of conditioning. You know?
Yes.
Had to push against a lot, this urge to want to please him.
Yeah.
And here again is where the intuition comes in to help us. My gut just said, no, 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 don't cave, don't cave. And I feel like my intuition sent me a message or something, like a visual of, you know, you're going to have kids. You know, is this woman that you, someone that you want to have around them? And, you know, I'm thinking about my little girl. I'm like, no, I have to say no. So took a deep breath, told my mom, no, she is not invited. And part of me was feeling some satisfaction already thinking, I'm like, oh my gosh, how is she going to react to this? Because, you know, she's been planning in her mind and I cannot have her here. Like, it's kind of satisfying to think that. And in the end, I decided not to invite her. She was so, her ego was so hurt by this. Then afterwards, there was no more contact. It was the end. You could feel after that night, it was just like this big axe came down.
Mm.
Yeah. And she was so insulted that she wanted to have nothing to do with me, which was perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your father came to the wedding, though.
He did. He did. Good. He was angry, you know, about
really?
This. Not on the day, you know, but afterwards and everything. And I said, I'm sorry, but I had to do
good for
what's
you.
Right for me. You can, you know, figure it out with her, but.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good. I mean.
Yeah.
I'm happy that you had your dad there, because my dad chose my toxic stepmom over me.
Oh my, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what my mom did. But yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Oh, so tell me about, I want to go back to how you work with women. So you said that there's mm-hmm. a common theme with the black sheep.
Yes.
A common theme that we have this intuitive, empathic side to us.
Yeah.
So how do you even get started? If someone were to come to you and say, okay, I know I'm wanting to find my soul's purpose. Mm-hmm. I'm wanting to be more aware of my mind's eye. Like, how do I start? I know we possibly don't have time. That's why I'll link all of your information
yeah.
in the show notes and let people know how to get in touch with you. But
yeah,
just briefly, and it must be such a cathartic experience for you. You must heal every time.
Yes.
Every time.
Totally. And so I love doing what I do. Every time a part of me I feel heals. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is the first step, let's say? Can you offer us the first step to getting in yes. touch?
So you would book through my website, and my signature offering is this reading called the Soul Story Session. And it's called the Soul Story Session because we've been told so many lies about ourselves, you know, by our narcissistic parents, all these lies. They made up this narrative about us. And it's really about, you know, shedding that and learning the truth about ourselves, you know, learning our soul story, who we're really meant to be. So after someone makes a booking, then we get in contact on email, and then I ask for a photo because it's great. I can do intuitive work. There's, you're not limited by time and space. You know, we say the eyes are the windows to the soul. And so it's true. So I ask for a selfie so I can look into the person's eyes. And then, you know, I also ask for a birthday and everything. But I always start with just feeling the person's energy, connecting to their spirit guides, because we all have them. And I feel for Black Sheep and Scapegoats, our connection with them is particularly strong. Mm. You know, the universe puts us through the ringer, but provides help. I always think of, you know, if you think of any fairy tale story, Hansel and Gretel were abandoned by their parents. There's always animal helpers, right? Or fairies. There's always helpers. So I connect to the spirit guides, spirit animals, all the helpers, and then talk to them. They will tell me, you know, about the soul story, about the past life story, and, you know, about the soul gifts. And I use a little bit of astrology as a tool as well. It shows, you know, what themes are reoccurring and what the gift from the wound is. Because every client has some. So everything that we were told was wrong about ourselves, you know, being troublemaker, being defiant, being selfish. I hate that one. That one's super scary for me.
Same.
I was always told I was selfish just because I didn't want to be enmeshed in drama.
2 seconds with you, and it's like you're the least selfish person on the planet. Like, gosh.
But all these things, you know, that we've been told were wrong about us are actually the exact gifts. So the selfish person, actually, if we reframe that, is the person that is self-contained, the person that is not willing to be enmeshed in the drama. My family was so enmeshed in, you know, everybody's business, really, to a toxic degree, and I didn't want to be part of it. You know, like my stepmom would make me do my half-sister's homework, but then they would get the credit. Very weird, you know, and it was all an extension of her ego. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not willing to do this. They need to do their own work.
Yeah.
You know? And then I was called selfish for not helping. So things like that. So the selfish person actually is self-contained. The troublemaker is actually the truth teller. Yeah. The overly sensitive person is actually an empath and, you know, intuitive. So all these things that have been twisted, you know, all these things that were wrong with us are actually the exact gifts that we can bring to the world, that we can contribute. And also by being ourselves, we're breaking the cycle.
Yeah.
Because the Black Sheep and the Scapegoat, they're usually born with the exact traits that lineage needs to heal, to break the pattern. Yeah.
Wow, that is so fantastic. So may I ask you like a personal question?
Yeah, go ahead.
About me. Okay. Yeah. And I think it'll resonate with some of the audience, so it's not just around me. And P.S., I'm going to be making an appointment with you as soon as we end this podcast, because I cannot wait. So I actually had a reading.
Yeah.
And the first person who came through for me was my ex-husband's grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I am the protector of your children, and you're still a part of this lineage. And at the time, I was setting some pretty serious boundaries with my ex-husband.
Yeah.
Because of other things. Mm-hmm. And because of that reading, I felt like, oh my gosh, like who am I to say I'm breaking toxic generational cycles, but then cut off that lineage? So I reached out to him and I actually played the recording, and he got emotional. He was like, oh my, and I go, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I talked to Granny yesterday. He was like, I don't think you're crazy. Cause he had just had a dream about grieving. He didn't get to say goodbye to her. So it was just, it was so beautiful. And then we had a conversation and things were good until they weren't anymore. And I had to set more boundaries just because of our personalities and the kids, whatever.
Yep.
But I still carry guilt. I feel like because I'm really technically no contact with my ex-husband, mm-hmm. that I'm breaking that lineage. Like, who am I to say that I'm breaking toxic generational cycles when I'm not alone? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Am I, like, how do I reconcile that? Because he's toxic, but am I affecting my children's lineage by stopping that? You know, I don't stop them from seeing him, but
yeah.
Like, what's your opinion on that?
I can definitely feel, you know, how you would feel that way. And an important thing to remember, and you know, when I do this work as well, when I speak to spirit guides or loved ones that have passed over, that boundaries are just as important, you know, in the real world and in the spirit world as they are here. You know, before I do any intuitive work, I always say a prayer of protection. We wouldn't talk to strangers here. And it's the same thing on the other side. Someone has passed away or just because, you know, it's a spirit guide doesn't mean that you need to listen to anything they say. Yeah. Or just because a spirit shows up that I must talk to them. The most important thing to remember is that we have free will. And while she may, you know, tell you these things, you have free will to act upon it or not. And I always feel if you're trusting your gut, then you're making the right choice.
Okay. Yeah.
To trust that, you know, if you feel a resistance toward this, there's a reason.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, me too, as a mom of two boys, that I need to remind myself is that our kids, they don't come in as blank slates. Mm-hmm. You know, every child comes in with a birth chart. There's already karma there from their mm-hmm. own past lives. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, things to learn as well. And they and sometimes it can be very hard as a mom when you see them going through some kind of challenge. But we don't know. You know, maybe it's one of these things where the universe is training them up for you know, their own journey and things like that.
Yeah.
So who is to say? And I would say, you know, if your gut had said at that time, you know, to set those boundaries, I would definitely trust that. It's always guiding.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. And see, this is why we all need to work, us who were just bruised and scarred by the narcissistic abusive narrative is we really do, like, moment by moment have to retrain and get the inner critic out, find which voices, find your gut, which voice, that's powerful work. Really powerful work. How do you reconcile, because I know I don't have a gift as deep as you do, but I have a gift when I see someone who is mm-hmm. in the throes of a narcissistic parent, you know, I'm like, I just want to save them. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to walk around and collect all the sheep and just you know, it's so frustrating. Like, what do you even do? And it must especially be especially overwhelming for you too, because mm-hmm. you've got that spiritual insight, you know? So how do you, if you have someone close to you and you know that they are living the life that you lived with. And I don't know if you actually have lived this, but how do you handle it? Because if it's a minor, you can't go, you know what? You know, you can't. I mean, you could, but.
Yeah, no, totally. I learned this the hard way. And sometimes it was with, you know, close friends who were in a toxic relationship. It was very clear, but I learned the hard way that you cannot make someone do something, even if you think you're rescuing them or helping them. You cannot rescue someone. It has to be their own choice. And like I said, they have lessons, you know, universe has lessons for them that we don't know about.
Yeah.
But the thing I would say that helps the most, and this is from a quote I think that I found on a fortune cookie.
I love it.
You know, your best friends are the ones that sing your song back to you. So I would say the best thing you can do, you know, either for a child or a friend or, you know, somebody, is to sing their song back to them. Remind them of who they really are, you know, so not the narrative that the narcissist is telling them, but we know, right? We can reflect their strength, resilience, goodness, their gifts back to them, sing their song back to them. So their song becomes louder than the inner critic. And then we trust when their song is louder, they'll know to make the right choice for them. Yeah.
I love that. It's so beautiful. Sing their song back to them. That is so beautiful. Oh, I love that so much. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Trying to see my next question through my tears. I've just loved this time together. What is there anything else that you'd like to share or anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to cover?
I think the main thing I want to share to, you know, whoever is listening to this is that you're not alone. And that even though they may be invisible, like I said, you know, the universe doesn't just throw us into all these challenges without giving us something. Even though you may not see them, I want everybody to know that we're surrounded by a spirit team who love us unconditionally, who are always there to guide us, who speak to us through our intuitive nudges, through synchronicities. And to know you're not alone on this journey. You're always being guided.
I love that. Yeah. That you're going to be okay.
Yes.
You're amazing. Anyone who meets you is just so blessed to be able to speak with you. And thank you so much for taking this time to chat with me and share your story. And I hope everyone can get to know you. I'm definitely going to link everything that you give me so people can get in contact with you and get
thank
to know you better.
Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you so much creating this, you know, this platform, this podcast. And just to think how many people you can help, how much I wished I had, you know, something like this to listen to when I was younger.
Thank you. Thank you for being so bold and vulnerable and sharing your story. Thank you so much. And thank you for all the work that you're doing.
It's been a pleasure.
See. Yeah. Cheers until next time, friends.